ladies and gentlemen, it has been far too long, but we are finally back together. My man, this is a special edition of Hard to Paint and High Low with none other than the Dean on the scene, Mr. Dino Hansen. My brother, welcome back.
My brother, it's good to be back. You know, I stay connected always still, thanks to the Fire Stick, but absolutely, man, it's good to be talking to you as always, my brother. Yes, sir.
The street's been asking about this for a long time, and we've talked about doing it, of course, because we love to converse. I mean, we are friends first and foremost, and we love to talk ball. And but it just, it, throughout the years we talked, it was like, it just, it, the timing was never quite right, because I think it's just, I think we wanted to see what the whole picture was going to look like. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a fully formed vision of the New Orleans Pelicans after what we saw in the 23-24 season. And there's a lot to cover there. But let's start. Last week, David Griffin had his press conference, and he talked about this offseason will not be one of complacency. Mm-hmm. We heard that last year, that it wasn't going to be an offseason of complacency. There weren't a lot of changes around the Pelicans last offseason. Matter of fact, you know, you could say that the Pelicans, you know, missed out on some opportunities last offseason. Mm-hmm. You come into this offseason, here you are again. I don't want to hear about the 49 wins. Ultimately, you were eighth in the West. Once again, you have not finished higher than eighth in the West in the last 5 years. If we're talking about changes and no complacency this offseason, it's got to start at the top, does it not?
You know, that's a fine line, because what happens is you have people that say, well, they have progressed, and you're always going to get the asterisk that says, if Zion, and you know this to be true, even with the 49 wins, if Zion wouldn't have gotten hurt. But that's the theme. That's been consistent. That's been a part of his career. Granted, he's played more games than he ever has, but the changes that are going to come are a necessary must in order for you to get to that next level. And when you say the top, are we talking, you think it's time for Griff to move on? Do you think it's time for Trajan Langdon to be seen more, to be more actively engaged? I mean, of course, we know on the court changes are going to be made. I mean, because they have to be made. I mean, we saw that during the playoffs. Some guys missing that heart. Okay, they're missing that edge of fight. But again, D. Grubb, you know this to be true. You're going to also have those who are saying, well, Willie is moving in the right direction. Do we want to go ahead and start over from that point of getting a new coach? Do we want to start over from getting a new GM, a owner? Because then you're going to have the other side. Well, Griff is not playing on the court. Willie is not playing on the court, despite some execution issues later on in games. And, you know, you feel like maybe sometimes he doesn't have enough control of the team and the game, where they go into ISO mode, where the ball stops moving. And we know the impact. D. Grubb, you and I have talked about this for the longest time. Even as a person who enjoyed playing defense, I didn't really like playing defense. I only did it so I could get on the offensive side of the ball.
Let's get the ball back.
Yes. That was it. So the fact that the ball doesn't move and it stays stagnant and they go into ISO mode when you've been effective in the ball movement, then all of a sudden, well, let me try to win the game. As a defender, there is nothing more that I loved than when somebody wanted to go ISO and they didn't want to move the ball, which means that I'm not going to be out of position and I have help. So I mean, so many different factors, but I'm not exactly, do we say Griff has earned one more year? Do we say Trajan and Swin most certainly have to make moves? Definitely this offseason.
You've proven your value.
Yeah.
Because my question is this. Trajan is interviewed for a number of jobs. No one has claimed him.
Mm-hmm.
So what is his influence, you know, within the Pelicans organization? That's a question you have to ask at this stage, because if he was as hot as he were 5 years ago, when a lot of people thought he should have been the guy making the decisions initially from the start for the Pelicans, here we are 5 years later, he is no longer a hot candidate for these jobs. And there have been a number that have opened up over the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And he has not been pulled away by any of those. Nobody's claimed him, made him an offer he can't refuse. We're here with Griff. And all of these are connected. Nothing in an organization operates by itself, right? It's an ecosystem. Everything requires the health of the other things. So the front office, it has to supply the players. For 5 years, what have we talked about with this organization? And we'll get into some trades and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we talked about a lack of interior defense and mm-hmm. a lack of ball handling at whatever position you want to say. If you want to say they need a traditional point guard, that's something you and I have advocated for. But if you want to say a primary ball handler, those two things, 5 years, those are still the same problems with this team. First and foremost, those two roster holes. Then you got Willie, who 3 years into his head coaching tenure still seems to be trying to figure things out on the fly. So you have to decide now, what is your timetable as an organization, right? Are we making the push to a championship? And if that's the case, do I want a coach who's still learning? That's not a knock against Willie. That's a legitimate question. And if it's the question is, now are we reorienting to our younger players? Because we tried this with Brandon and with CJ, if that becomes the other part of the discussion this offseason, and we reorient to Zion, who's 22, Trey, who's 23, Herb, who's 23, all these guys around the same age, we say this is the pivot now towards these younger guys, to Dyson mm-hmm. and this group mm-hmm. and Jordan, and we're going to build around them. If that's the pivot, then is Willie the guy to bring them up to that level? That's the question you have to ask there. And then, as you said, there are questions for a number of players that we'll get into too. But I think that, yeah, if you're David Griffin and Trajan Langdon and Swin Cash, you have to assess what is your culpability in this franchise not progressing as far as it has needed to over these 5 years.
They definitely are on the clock, if you will, just like the draft, they're on the clock. And from the standpoint of, yeah, we know what Zion can be, can become. We talked about for the longest time in need of a point guard. And when we say that, granted, we live in an age where you have a scoring point guard now. Yeah, absolutely. But the primary ball handler for the Pels that is missing is the one that will be directive in getting the team into their positions of where they're going to be successful. Just like you mentioned, Willie seems like he's doing things on the fly. You know, let's not forget this. Willie is a part of Monty in the sense of, if you remember, they don't like playing young guys, which is always something that has disturbed me, because here's my thought. If putting Jordan in the game is going to help me offensively and get me buckets and get activity going the same way we do with Jose, it shouldn't be a matter of, well, we've got a specific eight-guy rotation. Some nights, my guy may not be feeling it. He has proven to me that he can come in the game and be instant offense. My job is to get the W's, regardless of who it is that I'm putting in the game. And that's the level that you're not seeing. I get that we owe, or he has a mindset of, well, you know, it's CJ and we give him some loyalty. Bro, CJ don't have it tonight. We got to know when to pull back from that. B.I. doesn't have it tonight. We got to know when to say, I need a spark right now. And those are the things that great teams, successful organizations, and winning teams are willing to say and they're willing to do. You know what? This is what we have to do tonight. And then I want to see your body language when you're not in the game and you're having an off night. So everybody definitely is on the clock. And when we talk about having that primary ball handler, again, it's got to be that ball handler that has a high IQ, that knows when to not even tell somebody, give me the ball back, but willing to go over and take the ball back in order for me to get us in the proper position that we need. We have to have somebody with a high level of basketball IQ in order to run this show. Because what happens too many times is CJ gets stuck. B.I. gets stuck. Then they will throw up some random shot at the last minute. That's not what good organizations or good teams do.
You go back on bad habits when you have not been given an identity and a structure. And I think, you know, when you talk about wins, ultimately, when you talk about wins, it's not the total number of wins each season. It's how you got to that number. And when you look at the Pelicans, what do we know? They were unable to win games where they trailed after three quarters. They were one of the worst teams in the league in clutch situations. They never put together an extended winning streak. People think it's a joke when I bring up the five-game winning streak of not being able to do those types of things. But that is a baseline of consistency. When you see teams, Orlando, when you see Cleveland, when you see Houston, these teams are putting together 8, 9, 10-game winning streaks during the regular season. Young teams. Oklahoma City put together double-digit winning streaks. Young teams. What it says is that you have the discipline night in and night out to put together a streak no matter who's been put in front of you on the schedule. And the Pelicans have not shown that under Willie. They didn't show it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Understand, under Alvin, it is the pattern and the culture that is around the organization. There's no way in the world OKC should be as advanced as they have, as quickly as they have. But again, the identity, the guys knowing exactly who they are, what they do best, what they bring to the table. And here's the other thing. They play defense. They play defense in order to get on the offensive end. And
the Stars play defense. Let's put it, let's make sure we're clear about it. Because the Pelicans finished with a top 10 defense, top 6 defense. But the Stars,
your top players,
SGA always play defense. Plays defense.
Yes. And
Chet is going to play defense. Jalen Williams is going to play defense.
And they play with a particular edge on them. It's the mindset of, you don't think and expect us to be here, but we know we're supposed to be here. Same way with the Timberwolves. Yeah, are they early? Says who? Who says they're early on the trajectory that they're on? But again, they have built this level of regularity, repetition, and consistency. When we are in a jam, we know exactly what we're going to do, how to get out of this position. The Pels many a times look lost. Like they don't know what to do to get out of this position.
I think that, you know, they put a lot of people will put this on CJ McCollum and say, you're the veteran. You're supposed to be doing this at the end. CJ was not brought here to New Orleans to be the leader.
No,
he was brought to push the other two guys. One of them was supposed to seize this. And you were supposed to have your vet behind you say, yes, I am in your ear. You can get to that next level. But neither of those guys, and I think for different reasons, has been able to seize the overall mantle of this team. I think that that internal struggle is still what defines this organization as well. Is this Zion's organization? Is this Brandon's? And I think for a while, quite frankly, the front office was trying to intend for it to be Brandon's. But now that Zion has played 70 games, has given you the healthy Zion for the season, gave you 40 and 11 in a play-in game where his other guy wasn't there, but he was going to give you – he was walking the Lakers down by himself at that point. I think it's untenable at this stage to say anything other than – if you're going to build around somebody on this team, if there is a franchise player on this team, it must be Zion Williamson. You cannot, if you are thinking for another, that there's another player on this roster who could be a franchise player, you're mistaken.
Sadly mistaken. And even when the BI was, they were trying to propel him into being that guy, that was more by default because Zion wasn't there. Okay, you have three guys whose character and personality isn't that of a leader, that of an edge. They're quiet guys also. They don't get into each other and hold each other accountable. That's another aspect that is missing as well. B.I., CJ shouldn't have issues with being able to address each other and figure out how to resolve certain issues that may be going on and how to get out of those particular issues. We all know it's Zion's team. It has to be. But Zion and you, and mind you, we've seen glimpses of it, D, in that when he plays with intent, when he, it's almost sometimes where I wish somebody on the team would intentionally make him mad before the game starts. Because when he gets in this a very ornery type mood, not only is he being aggressive on the offensive end, but defensively. You and I have talked about this from day one when we first drafted Zion. If he would put more emphasis on being that weak side defender and intimidator at the rim, it would change the landscape of this ball club. But he tends to go with the flow too much, almost as if I get that you're young and you don't want to upset maybe some of the veterans. But whether you like it or not, it's your team. You have to be the catalyst. Ask Anthony Edwards if he cares that Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, and the rest of the squad is older than him. He could care less. You see him on the sideline dictating and telling guys what's going to happen. The moment is yours. You have to seize this. And until they have a Zion or somebody on that team that is willing to do that, we're going to continue to circle back around and around and around, talking about the same thing of what's needed, what has to be done, but nothing changes. It's the definition of insanity.
So what Pelicans have done have repeated the same mistakes over and over again each year. They've continued to do this. You've seen failures. We talked about this at the very beginning of this rebuild, is that you can't do two things at once. And the Pelicans tried that from the start. They tried to be competitive and develop young players. You can't do those two things. You got to make a choice. You have to make a choice. The Rockets are in that position now where they've got to make a choice. You see it already. They're starting to have to figure out. Some of these young dudes got to go. Orlando is getting to that point where they're going to have to make the choice on all those young dudes. It's great to have them, but everybody can't stay. OKC started to move some vets in with these young dudes because they know you can't have everybody be 22 and 23 years old. Eventually, that will catch up with you. You got to have some vets in those role-playing positions. And the Pelicans have tried this to be young and keep these cheap contracts, develop all these guys and love their players. And there's a huge danger in overvaluing your own assets. And I feel like the Pelicans either overvalued their assets for these five seasons in some cases and held on to guys for too long that they should have. And then they waited, and that lack of aggression, which goes back to the front office and making some moves to address these major needs because you wanted to see how things played out. You don't have time for that in the NBA anymore. This is no longer. Oh, hold on.
You good?
Okay.
You good?
Yeah. All right. You don't have time for that in the NBA anymore of trying to get a 5 to 10 year window with a team. There's none of that. There's a 3 year window now for teams. You know, you don't get that kind of time. And I think the Pelicans have been operating under the assumption that they've had time. Well, now you're 5 years in. And like you said, the rest of the West alone has caught up to you. You know, the Rockets won 41 games last year. The Grizzlies will be back with Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and a healthy 3J. And then on top of that, they will be adding a lottery pick to that group. Mm-hmm. So you talk about that addition to that team. And that is also well coached. The Spurs will be better next year. Come hook or by crook, they'll be better. Mm-hmm. Wimby will be better. So who are you talking about in the West that's going to get appreciably worse? The only team you're looking at that is probably going to get worse next year is Golden State, and even they have chips to move and things to play to build around Steph Curry. The Pelicans are in a situation where you look at them and you say, where does the help come from? Because even if you stick with what you got, you know what the ceiling is. I know what the ceiling is with this group if I stick with what I got. But if I go outside, how many teams are there really that are willing to make the kind of move that it's going to take to get the Pelicans to the next level?
Another thing that is of concern is JV and his impact with this basketball team. And even if you move on, because I watched the exit interviews, of course, and you didn't get a sense from JV that he's going to be back. You just didn't, because he said he's going to test the open market to see what's out there. And I can sense what his frustration is. The utilization and the lack thereof, him being a big. But then later on in stretches, now you want to come to me to resolve what you have allowed throughout the course of the game. Listen, JV is a very effective big man. I've seen people talk about, well, what about DeAndre Ayton? The last thing you want to do is bring a DeAndre Ayton, another young guy, who's also cantankerous, who's an emotional big, who you can't depend upon. JV gives you that brute that you need. But again, you are still, and I'm glad to see, being a basketball traditionalist, of course, I'm glad to see that things are moving in the direction of the utilization of bigs again, and everything is not all five out anymore. I say that with the caveat of the cyclical aspect that we have, unfortunately, because I feel like we're in Groundhog's Day, having the same conversation that you and I have been having. Even in these 2-3 years that we haven't talked, it's literally picking up right where we left off, talking about some of the same necessary instrumental pieces that you have and moves still have not been. You're not going to elevate and get to that next level, because here's the thing about it. Those other teams that you just mentioned, Houston, Memphis, OKC, they were willing to make those moves. You have to be willing to risk it and make the move in order for you to elevate to where you need to go, because this mediocrity, it can continue to fester, because that's all we're really doing is swimming around in mediocrity and continuously saying, Zion is hurt. Zion is going to get hurt. We know this. The level of torque that this young brother puts on his body and the impact, even though he is eating better, he's looking more explosive. There are things that are going to be with Zion the rest of his life now. That's just what it is. So you can't count on and continuously say to your fan base, if Zion was here, okay, but guys, he's not. And I'm glad that he finally was able to play as many games as he did. But you still need that other person, that leader, not just another complimentary guy. Because that's what CJ and BI really are. They're complimentary pieces. They aren't lead dogs.
Upset a lot. I have upset many people on the Brandon Ingram, side of this. And I firmly believe, like you said, Brandon is a good player, but you don't pay good players like great players. And my question to people, and they thought it was disrespectful, and I'm going to go through this with you, because I think you and I have not discussed this. Mm-hmm. But I said, if you go through the other 14 teams in the West, there are only maybe two teams that I think would put Brandon Ingram in their top two talent-wise. You start with Oklahoma City. No, he doesn't fit there, does he? If you said give up one of your top two, we talk about SGA, Chet, and Jalen Williams are their big three. Is Brandon better than any of those three guys?
And there's no way you're gonna move those three, because as lanky and frail as Chet is, Chet plays with the chip as well.
So then we go to Denver. You go to Denver, and they're big three of Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Aaron Gordon, or Michael Porter Jr., however you want to sort it. Do you take Brandon of any in that group? No.
Absolutely not, because those four guys that you mentioned on Denver, they also know what their role is. And not only do they know what their role is, D-Grub, they play into those roles consistently night in and night out.
Minnesota. Anthony Edwards, like you said, Anthony Edwards, Cat, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, McDaniels, Naz Reid. They're happy with what they have in their top six.
Extremely happy. They're the team that has changed the gauntlet to make people realize, no, you can play with two bigs on the floor. And we're not going to acquiesce and play your way. We're going to make you play our way.
The Clippers, yes, they're in flux, but still, if you count, if Kawhi and Paul George are healthy, you count Kawhi and Paul George over BI every day of the week, you're still taking James Harden right now over him as well. And I think there's some young guys on their roster too who's starting to come into their own.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that whatsoever. When PG is on his game, when Kawhi is there and healthy, even though he has played the most games that he has in the last three seasons, which is significant for him, James Harden is still a good regular season, can get you wins in the regular season. I still don't feel like he's a playoff guy. I feel like he shrinks all the time.
Clippers won't trade him for Brandon Ingram.
But no, they won't make that move. Again, BI is not consistent, doesn't show up nightly. He has too many off nights.
Phoenix would do it. People have proposed a Devin Booker trade or in some way to bring BI to New Orleans from Phoenix. I don't see Phoenix making a move and trading Booker for Brandon Ingram.
in spite of Matt,
I
was going to say, in spite of Matt Ishbia and some of the decisions that he made when he first became the governor of the team, which are very questionable, and I thought they were questionable from day one, you're not going to give up a KD. You're not going to give up a Devin Booker. You're not going to do that for a BI. Because, again, you know those two guys not only can get their own shot, but create their own shot and in a very aggressive way. B.I. shrinks. Whether people like it or not, he shrinks.
Lakers aren't going on a rebuild with him. They've already had him.
They had him.
They're not going to rebuild with him. Sacramento's not going to give up Keegan Murray for him.
And the fact that Keegan is younger. The fact that Keegan is also younger. The fact that De'Aaron Fox and Keegan know how to play well off of each other.
Ball goes through Sabonis. B.I. is not going to play off the ball with Sabonis. It's not going to work.
No. It's going to be literally a traffic jam all the time. Yeah. Go ahead.
Golden State. Steph, Kuminga, Draymond. You know, Klay is a free agent. I don't think they bring Klay back, but I don't think they – after what you saw out of Kuminga down the stretch – I think now Golden State has to feel like Kuminga's our wing for the future.
That's the growth that they wanted to see. And Kuminga not only was able to play with them, there were games where he would take over, which is what they needed in that wing player, because Andrew Wiggins no longer is that guy. And Andrew Wiggins only had a short stint where he was that guy, and he was more defensive anyway. But Kuminga not only being able to knock down mid-range shots, the fact that he will get to the rim and, more importantly, get fouled and knock down free throws, making the game simple.
Houston. You know, you're talking about a lot of great young talent in Houston. You got Amen Thompson, who's could play both forward positions, Cam Whitmore, who looked like a steal in the draft. They've got small forwards and power forwards coming out of 8 years in Houston.
Shingun. I love Shingun. Jamari Smith Jr.
I mean, like, their front court is set. They don't need – and you still got Dylan Brooks playing defense out there at the small forward spot, too.
Mm-hmm.
So they're set. Mm-hmm. They're not doing this. So, I mean, Utah, no, because he won't play Danny Ainge-style basketball. Brandon Ingram does not fit what they want to do. Sexton and the way that they want to play up-tempo, shooting threes, all those things. B.I. does not shoot threes. He does not play off ball. He's not going to fit in Utah.
He also stagnates your offense many a times as well because of him having to have the ball in his hand. Okay, and some of
you already have a ball dominant guard there.
And mind you, this is not to definitely want to be clear about this. This is not to knock B.I. Talented, good player, not that great player that's going to elevate you to the next level. It's not a knock on him.
No,
heck, I mean, hey, bro. At one time, I was projected to be like, man, Dino's gonna be that next level dude. I was a good player once I got out of college. It's what it is. I don't take it personally.
First, talked about the Memphis big three. He's not going to crack their big three. He in San Antonio, they would not at this stage. You're not building. If you're building around Wembanyama, what you want is, again, people are going to get him the ball people are going to run and make his life easier. Mm-hmm. You got to make you cannot play half court basketball with Wembanyama over and over again because of his body type. He has to play up tempo ball. And if in the half court, he's got to have people going to move the ball quickly for him because mm-hmm. his posting is going to be quick and repost, quick repost. He can't sit there and hold the block down for 6-7 seconds.
Like Charles Barkley would say, he's too light in the cakes, baby. Too light in the cakes.
So then your last one is Portland. And why would Portland do it? You're in the middle of a rebuild. You just got all your young players in. You're getting all your picks. Mm-hmm. Why am I going to take B.I. in at that position? I know we're the worst team in the West. We're going to be the worst team in the West for a couple of years. Why am I going to take on a guy who wants a max salary during that time who ain't going to sell tickets in Portland either?
Right. Right. He's not that kind of personality. He's not that kind of individual that people are going to put it like this. And let's be clear for people. Is it somebody that's going to make you want to come to the arena and watch them ball? He's not that guy. He's not.
In New Orleans, you'll say that because you didn't have Zion available.
And that's the route you have to, and that's the route again. By default. That's all it is.
And I mean, let's be real. Even in the East, if we're talking about a healthy East, he's not top three in Boston. He's not top three in New York. New York got rid of a guy like him who still shot more threes than he did in R.J. Barrett. The guy who just did not fit with everybody else. R.J. Barrett did not fit with the Knicks. They had to move him on and get a guy like OG Anunoby who did the dirty work that they wanted out of that small forward position. He's not cracking the top three in Milwaukee. He's not cracking the top three in Cleveland. He's not cracking the top three in Orlando. It's like right now, B.I. is like we've said, he's a fringe all-star. If somebody gets hurt, one all-star appearance he made, people keep bringing up that one. He was an alternate. He wasn't selected by the coaches or the fans. He was an injury replacement. And that's not, again, these are not knocks. It's hard to be an all-star in this league.
Truly.
But that tells you something, that when you've been given the opportunity 4 years later and the ball's been in your hands primarily with this organization because of the amount of time that Zion Williamson has missed, you've never made another All-NBA team. You've never made another All-Star team. You've never made any type of those types of things after your first year, when you could say the reason you get most improved players is because you got shots.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's be real. You know, we talk about this all the time. Opportunity. Every player in the NBA is looking for shots because these are all the top 1% of the top 1% players in the world. Mm-hmm. So everybody is saying, if I get 15, 20 shots a night, I should be able to score 20 points a night. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the league thinks that they can do that, right, if given the shot volume. It's, can you do that and be impactful? And we have gotten to the point, I think, with Brandon Ingram, that we saw his regression is his decision to not shoot threes. It is not something that somebody is taking away from you defensively. That is a choice that he's made to not shoot three-pointers. Mm-hmm. It is his decision to slow off and break off the offense in the half court. That is a Brandon Ingram decision. We can talk about what coaches are willing to do about these decisions and whether other players are going to hold you accountable. But Brandon Ingram at this stage has shown you that he is more willing to play his style of basketball than adapt to the style of basketball you need to win basketball games.
Absolutely. And you've seen it too many times where he breaks off and does his own thing. And you can see, and the way to help people understand, how do you know that's happening where he's breaking off? Because literally the remaining four on the court are looking at each other and wondering, where do I go? What am I supposed to be doing? Because he's just changed it up. Again, this is not a knock. So I don't want people to think that we're banging on B.I. or the Pels. No, it's not at all. But we're talking about, what do you need to do and how do you get to that next level? And as long as you're doing things of that nature, you're not going to elevate to that next level. You're just not. And a lot of times, actually, sometimes when he's running on the court, he causes more confusion than anything else when he's on the court. And then when he does get the ball, his decision-making and his shot selection, the choices that he makes, it comes down to the execution.
I think it has hampered Zion in the sense that you saw at the end of the season when and people talk about Brandon coming back too early from the injury, the 12 games that he played prior to the injury, before he left, he was averaging less than 20 points. He was shooting less than 45% from the field. He was shooting less than 30% from three. Those were all before the injury. He said himself, this was the worst year that he's had going all the way back to the Team USA experience.
And he did admit that.
Why was this the worst year? But why was this the worst year, Brandon? Because that's the important thing, is can you be introspective and figure out why? And it's fine for him to say to people on the side of their keyboards and on the thing who are saying, nobody, again, this is not personal shots. I'm asking, if this was the worst year, what was the common theme? In the Olympics, it was Brandon couldn't adapt. That's what the coaches came back saying, essentially. All the coaches on Team USA, from all the observers, said Brandon couldn't adapt to his role with Team USA. Coming back to the Pelicans all season long, Brandon couldn't adapt. Zion had to adapt. CJ had to adapt. CJ had the most efficient shooting season of his career because he adapted his game to fit what he needed to do. Herb Jones adapted and became almost a 50-40-90 shooter this year. Everybody adapted to this during the season, except for Brandon Ingram, who saw his assists go down, saw his rebounds go down, his free throw attempts go down, his three-point attempts go down, his three-point percentage go down. Yeah, his true shooting percentage and these things, he makes those the middies, and that's fine. but he is impacting the other players in a way, as you said, which creates confusion in the half court and ultimately challenges the hierarchy of the way possessions are supposed to go. The options, you know, when a possession starts and you got the ball, there's a set. There's a hierarchy of the way that that set is supposed to go.
Absolutely.
Who's the option? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Absolutely.
On that play. If you crack that, like you said, and guys no longer know, am I supposed to be cross-screening now because he didn't take the first screen? Mm-hmm. He didn't throw the first pass. He didn't drive as far as he was supposed to go initially. You saw the reason the Pelicans got called for so many offensive fouls against Oklahoma City. Guys were not able to hold their screens because the driver would leave early and not wait for the screener to set their screen. Who was the guy initiating that most of the time? Who was the guy not waiting for the screener to do his job? You can't set your guys up for failure. You have to hold, you have to set that screen up. You know, whatever you do, whether it's a dribble to the opposite side, whether it's a back up, whatever you're doing, set your man up, allow that screen to be set. And B.I. was not doing that, and so you end up with the amount of offensive fouls that the Pelicans were getting into.
And what many of people really don't recognize is that in this age of ISO ball, there are actually more set plays that are designed than what the naked eye is seeing. Just like you mentioned, based upon the hierarchy, after that third pass, you're expecting this JV to come up this particular way. All of a sudden, B.I. or C.J. or whomever decide they're going to break off from the play. Now it changes everything of what the actual set was, and it's going to seem like it's more ISO ball, when in actuality, it really wasn't. It's one of those situations where if you'd have made that one or two extra passes, you would have gotten exactly what the play was designed to give you. They break off too much.
I think that, you know, the conflict there between Willie and James Borrego, who James Borrego wanted to institute a more up-tempo offense that created shots for guys. And you saw guys like Trey Murphy struggled to get shots. And it should be very simple to generate these looks for a guy like Trey, who was 6'9 and can shoot it from every position on the mm-hmm. floor. But you saw again in the postseason, in the regular season, again, there from night to night, whether he would get shots was always in question. Mm-hmm. And a guy who's your sixth man, it should never be a question of how many shots he's getting.
Right.
When you know this guy has the potential to put up 20 every night
right.
off the bench, mm-hmm. it should not be a question. There should never be a night that you walk into the locker room and say, how did Trey end up with 9 shot attempts? How did Trey end up with 7 shot attempts? That comes from a lack of discipline up and down the roster. Like I said, it's not just B.I. It's 12 guys. It's 12 Absolutely. Guys not running the offense to the way it's supposed to be run
totally.
And getting the results that they wanted to get. So you end up going back to, like we said, when you get into the end of a shot clock, you go back to what you know best. You go back to your habits.
Yep.
And when you do that, other teams, as you said, defenders are grateful because that's what they are paid to do, is know your habits first and foremost.
And they are counting on you going back to your habits, which makes their job that much easier, which is the reason why so many teams were able to get up the court on the Pels as quickly as they were, because you're going to go back to your habit, we're going to rebound, and we're going to go to get exactly what we want. It happens continually. It happens continually. You know, and again, D. Grubb, I go to this. There's no level of accountability. There's just not. And anytime Borrego wants to run something this way and Willie, who's the head, wants to do it this way, let's not forget, Borrego was a head coach in the NBA as well. When you have two guys who are not on the same page, you're going to have the continuum of, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, where I'm supposed to be at. He broke this off. I was waiting for him to come here, but when he didn't come here, I went here, but that caused confusion over here. Now the opposing team is going the opposite direction. It's really that simple. Like, this is not – and that's the thing about it. This is basketball. It's not rocket science, okay?
No. No, and it's not a video game either. It's not just assembling players you like and putting them on there and thinking that's going to be –
Yeah,
this is team building, and there are skill sets that you have to complement people. And like you said, this is the league is getting taller again. The league is getting – look at the teams that are up at the top. What did the Celtics go out and get? Length, Porzingis, you know, to go with Al Horford. You got 2 7-footers. Mm-hmm. The Knicks have 2 7-footers in Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein. You know, you're talking about all the teams that you're talking about advancing all got bigs. All of them have bigs.
Philadelphia like with Joel Embiid, okay?
Denver's problem against Minnesota and what the Lakers could not exploit, the thing that the Lakers used to their advantage when they were in the bubble that they didn't think about in the last two seasons was you had 4 bigs to throw at Jokic before, and now you got one.
That's it.
Like you have to, the league is being dominated by the Embiids, the Adebayos, the all the bigs, the Chets, these guys, the Wembanyamas. The length is whether you want to say traditional centers or not. You better have length on your roster. And the Pelicans don't have length.
The same way Golden State changed the gauntlet for those few years, those 8, 9, 10 years that they did with the spacing and the smaller player and the versatile wing player between 6'5" to 6'7". Well, guess what? You got to catch up with the times again. It is changing back to technically the big, the length. You have to have it again. Just like when people talk about Trae Young going to this, that Trae Young is never going to thrive and take your team to another level. Unfortunately, he's a little guy. It's about the length of everything now. It's going back to what it's supposed to be about. What we all consider the basketball to be given anyway. You know, you talk about this positionless, and to a degree, basketball really has always been positionless to a degree. Okay, that's what's like
the best players.
Yeah.
That's best players. I mean, you can talk about the Celtics. We can go through the Celtics dynasties, and you can talk about guys like Satch Sanders and Casey Jones weren't traditional point guards.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like if you want to talk – when the Lakers were playing with Magic and Norm Nixon in the backcourt together, that was positionless basketball. Jamal Wilkes, Michael Cooper, those were positionless. Kareem was this – James Worthy was not traditional power forward, but he played power forward for the Lakers.
He played power forward, but he was far from – and think about how many times J-Dub might initially – have his back to the goal, but then he reverse pivots to see the floor and attacking. So technically, yeah, on paper, he's a power forward, but he wasn't a power forward.
I mean, what are we doing? Yeah, it's always put your best five on the floor. It always comes down to at the end of the game, whether it was the bad boy Pistons, whoever, you won't put your best five on the floor at the end of the game. And if your best five doesn't stack up with the other team's best five, particularly your number one, because in no sport other than basketball is your number one guy able to carry you to a championship. You can have the best quarterback and never win a Super Bowl. You can have the best hitter in baseball and never win a World Series. You can have the best pitcher and never win a World Series. But in basketball, if you have the unquestioned best player in your league, you're going to win a title or two. That's just the way the game goes.
Well, a prime example. Look at the way Phoenix decided, well, we can just let Devin – be our point guard, and we'll have KD and Bradley Beal be our point guard by committee when need to be. That didn't work out either. That's the same look the Pels have with a CJ, with the B. You don't, whereas a Minnesota, Mike Conley might be up in age, but guess what? He's still a high IQ point guard. He still gets it. They're elevated that level. Drew, you think Boston was foolish when they was like, oh, okay, Milwaukee, you don't want Drew anymore? Perfect. Perfect. And we're going to give him a new contract as well because they got what the intangibles were that a Drew Holiday brings to that team.
Same with Derek White.
Same thing with Derek White. Bro, Boston knew what they had in JT and Jay Brown. We need those other pieces that's going to get us to that next level and keep us there at a high level consistently, not just get close every single season. They have stayed there, and Porzingis being hurt definitely could be a blow to them, elevating to that next level. But look at even with New York, and they decided, oh, okay, Dallas, you don't want to re-sign Jalen? We had no idea Jalen was going to do this. But, boy, how has that panned out? And you still got Hartenstein. You got Precious Achiuwa, okay? You got guys who have bought, and mind you, The Knicks have done this all without Julius Randle, who was supposed to be that other second guy to combine with Jalen Brunson. And they have not missed a single beat since he's been gone.
And you could say that they still have a ceiling. Absolutely. I think the Knicks have a ceiling. But what you have is the coach who, again, no matter what you think of Tom Thibodeau, Tom Thibodeau gave the Knicks an identity. You know what I'm saying? He gave them identity.
Yes.
He set players' responsibilities. This is what you do. He holds them accountable. Again, I don't love everything about him, but you can't tell me he doesn't know his team.
Why are we talking about
basis, he know, you know what I'm saying? We know his team.
D Grub, why are we talking about the same three concepts again? Identity, accountability, guys knowing their roles. Bro, we did the same thing with Stan Van Gundy, which we both said from the beginning, Stan Van Gundy is not the guy that should be coaching the Pelicans basketball team.
What's funny is everything that the Pelicans are successful at right now is what Stan wanted to do. Point Zion.
Right.
Getting up a volume of threes and having the defensive, defensive identity.
But at the time that Stan was there,
messenger.
There you go.
Who was the one? I'm not going to say no names, but who was the one who checked out on that season real early because he didn't like what the coach was saying to him and how he was saying it?
Big bro. And he's going, bye-bye, Birdie.
So you battle, yeah. And it's like what you.
But like, we had the same conversation, D. Grub, and I don't want to cut you. But we had the same. Like if somebody was to go back and look at the podcast from five years ago. Mind you, I said four before I left New Orleans to move to Dallas because I know my worth. All right, I know my value. All right, so from 4 years ago. If somebody went back 7 years ago when we had Elm, if they go back to the time capsule of you and I talking about what we're referring to right now, they'd be like, okay, did you guys record this just yesterday? This is from 7, 8 years ago, guys. It's the same cycle. And until you change that, you're going to continue with this level of mediocrity. You just are. And it doesn't matter. Well, the team should be so much better than this. Well, here's what the record says. This is what they are. You went from being a top-tier team in the West, second, third, to all of a sudden in the play-in. Something's got to give. Something has to change, whether you like it or not. And again, you can't put it all on Zion. You just can't.
Because those losses, again, those things, when you lose games, you're never able to come back. That wasn't on Zion all those games. When you can't secure things in the last 5 minutes, like I said, that's not on Zion in all those games. This is an organizational issue. This is a team-wide issue. This is players who know that they are not given a competitive advantage on the sidelines. This is players who know that there are players who are not being held accountable. This is a coaching staff that is still was not assembled by Willie Green as people who are Willie's people, as people who are not Willie's people on this staff. And you have a front office that has overpromised and underdelivered. Because here you are, again, when you got into this, you were a lottery team given the number one pick in the draft, and the most tradable asset in the NBA at the time. And here you are, having done all this stuff. Your first round picks have not panned out. Your young players have not developed. Your stars have not become elite. So what are you other than what your position, not your number of wins, your position says you are. And you have still never done better than eighth in the Western Conference in this 5-year span. And like you said, you settled back to where you are. Last year, you climbed up to first in the West and you settled back to where you belong. This year, you were in the top four in the second half of the season, and you settled back to where you belong because water finds its level, right? Water finds its level.
And don't get mad at us because we're bringing it to light and sharing with you what it is. Like, don't shoot the messengers. We're just breaking it down and sharing with you. And you can be as emotional attached as you want to be. You can have all the hope in the world of what you could be, what you should be. But are you that? Have you done what's necessary to become that? When games are on the line, your decision-making, the execution, are you in a position to say, we have reached that pinnacle and we have crossed that bridge now? And they haven't, guys. They just haven't. So moves have to be made top down. We live in the world of what have you done for me lately? What have you done today? Doesn't matter. Well, you know, the intentions, you know, we had good ideas. Everybody's got a good idea. Are you waking up and weren't, are you waking up to go and put that idea into action? And that's the key part that is missing. Listen, I've always liked Willie. I've been a fan of Willie even when he was a player. I loved his tough, the tough nose aspect that he brought with him. I love the fact that guys on this team play for Willie, and you can see guys play for him. But at some point in time, you know what's going to start happening, and when that coach doesn't hold players accountable and guys are smart enough to recognize this, they're going to start tuning him out. That's what's going to start to happen. And that can easily change the direction of where your organization goes if that happens. It's essential. For as much as, like you mentioned about Tibbs, for as much as many people may not like his methods about how he goes doing things, you know exactly who Tibbs is, and you know exactly who that team has become. They have taken on his personality. And unfortunately, the Pels, and this is in coaching across the board, players tend to take on the personality of the guy that's the coach.
The fans saw that, you know, the lack of combativeness. You know, like when you're watching your team get out-physicaled at home in the playoffs, we could just take that as a small sample size, but we saw it all through the season. When you're a team and you finish barely above 500 at home, and you're a playoff team, when you have the best road record in the league, but you can barely win at home, no matter who the opponent is, you struggle at home. That is that's a lack of a fire. That's a lack of discipline. That's a lack of preparedness. Because all the advantages should be yours at home. That's why it's called home court advantage. Yeah. You should be more rested. You should be more prepared. It's your court. It's your rims. It's everything. It should be for you. The crowd is for you.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, that is about not getting your players ready and not having the players. Also, like you said, it's both. It's not one or the other. It's both. You're not communicating the message properly, and it's not being executed properly.
Two things can be right.
It's a failure. Yeah, it's a failure on all parts.
Yeah.
There's nobody who should escape blame in the organization. And as again, you can be happy with 49 wins if you want. And you can say this was the second most successful regular season in franchise history. You can be happy with that. But the placement ultimately is where you ended up. You're eighth.
And then the team that you play comes in to the blender and literally dominated you. Like, there was no if and buts about it. Like, they had it set in their mind because, again, they see the same film. They know how your record is at home. And they came with the mindset of, these guys can't win at home. Let's go and just take it over and do what we're supposed to do. And, again, D-Grub, when I tell you I'm sitting there and I'm on the phone with my uncle, because some people don't know, of course, you know, my uncle represents SGA. And he and I are sitting on the phone talking. And I go, you know what makes SGA so good? His ability to lull you to sleep and then just explode out of nowhere. You think he's getting ready to set up something. And in actuality, he's getting ready to take whatever you have left out of you. He has an uncanny way of doing that. But then on top of that, you have a Jalen Williams. You have a Chet. You have, and I'm comparing OKC because OKC was supposed to be behind us. Supposed to be behind the Pels. And the guys on that team didn't believe it. The guys on that team didn't play like it. You also saw the level of communication. You don't see enough of that with the guys on this team. You just don't. And I don't know what it is.
It feels performative, and it's fine that they get along. But when OKC had 12 dudes in the press conference, it felt different than when the Pelicans had their five or six. Because, you know, it just when you look back on those now, especially the last one, you know, right before when Zion was like, man, and when B.I. gets back, and you look back at that one now, and you wonder, did they have to say that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of feel like, do they have to do this? Is this something that they're being pushed to do? Because mm-hmm. it stops feeling natural at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and as you said, the same thing, everybody's got to fall into their pocket. The Minnesota pocket has been determined.
Yeah.
That's Ant's team.
Yeah.
Everybody's figured it out. In Denver, they know how to Jokic ain't going to say nothing, but it's his tempo. And how Minnesota beat them, they got Jokic out of tempo.
Yep.
We've always talked about this. The way you win games defensively and offensively is by making the other person uncomfortable.
Make them
The Pelicans' style of play, either because of the players they have or the way that they choose to play, it does not force teams to be uncomfortable. No. It relies on them to miss because it's a defense that is insistent on we're going to contest, we're going to make them shoot a bunch of threes and they're contest them, but you can't protect the paint at all.
Look at it this way.
The kind of defense you play,
look at it this
and
way.
And you're relying on people to be soft. That ain't going to happen in the playoffs.
The Pels play with a hope that things go in their favor. And in order for them to continue that, they have to have good vibes and good energy in order for that to happen. With other teams, you don't get that level of that mindset, okay? And I say that from the perspective of not at one point in time do you ever see them in sync to the point that they know they can come down and run this play and get a bucket. You don't ever see that level of confidence. It's always a hope. I hope this play works. I hope when I pass the ball here it works. I hope if the other team misses, then we can do. It's never we are going to. It's never we're dictating everything that goes on. You don't see that from them. They spend time in limbo.
They're a science project. All the variables have to be right for this project to work.
Yeah.
They cannot deal
That's
with.
That's a good way to put it.
You know, they cannot deal. If one of these variables is off, the whole experiment falls apart.
Yeah.
For them. And that is not how champions are built. Champions deal with. That's why we revere champions. It's because the path was not straight. And we talked about this. This feels like we've repeated this before on a different show because we've said this time and time again. The biggest things that the Pelicans have to acquire are not measured. It's not height. It's not speed. It's not shooting acumen. Is here and is here. And those two things cannot be measured. And people keep looking for those things. And there are players that will do better. I absolutely believe there are better fits for this roster. But unless you get the kind of people from top to bottom who are all committed to the same thing, and this is very simple, to do whatever the hell it takes to win. Whatever. Like you said, we talk about Dan Campbell in Detroit, a losing culture that he walked into. And when he got there, I laughed when he said, we're going to bite kneecaps, we're going to drag people, we're going to claw, we're going to fight. And here you are 3 years later, and everybody in the league wants to figure out what he's got in that bottle.
Because
that team now is one of the more feared teams in the NFL. People do not fear. Draymond said it. People do not fear the New Orleans Pelicans. Because ultimately, the Pelicans cannot impose their will on good teams. And if you can't do that, you ain't a good team.
That's what exactly we have been talking about. I'm referring to is the fact that they spend their time in hopes. I hope everything goes right. I hope we can do this. As opposed to, damn it, this is what we are going to do. We are going to impose our will instead of just conforming and going with the flow and hope a few good things go in our favor. We hope we get a call here or there. We hope this player makes a shot. We hope ain't ever won you nothing. And that's why they stay right where they are. Look, we both know and agree changes have to be made. They have to. If you want to elevate and grow to that next level. If they don't, we're going to be right back here in the same level of mediocrity talking about woulda, coulda, shoulda. It's not the case. You have to move. If you want a different outcome, you have to move differently and be willing to risk that and make those particular moves. This is nothing personal. I like you. I like you as a person. You're a good player. But where we're trying to go, you're not helping us get there. And at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. Dude, we know our worth. We know what we can be. But because of sometimes the personal relationships, because of the emotional attachment that people have, not everybody is meant to grow. Not everybody is meant to elevate. Bro, this is where I'm trying to get. I have a plan in place. If you can't help us get there, I got to move. We got to move. And that's the situation the Pelicans find themselves in. You know, I mean, we talked about it from day one when it comes to Griff. You know, you think he's a spindler sometimes, you know? Like, he's that slick oil salesman. It's like, bro, can we be legit on what's really going on? And, of course, they're never, because there's so many things that go on behind the scenes. And, you know, we try to share this with people for the longest for years. There are so many things that go on behind the scenes that the ordinary average fan really doesn't know about why this move is made, why this move wasn't made, and why is this player getting more playing time? There are so many things that go on behind the scenes that people just don't know. Fortunately enough, we know many of those things that go on behind the scenes, which is why we've said the things that we say. There's nobody, you can go across the league, outside of Zion, who on this team would anybody else want? Who on this team would anybody else want to come that's going to also
change? As much as you want.
Exactly.
As much as you want.
Exactly.
Who values exactly. Your players? The ones who you got to watch. Like, honest, obviously, it'd be Trey and Herb. People want them because they're on great contracts and they're young and their upside is there.
And I think those are the intangibles they bring. Yes. Yes.
Because I think Trey has star quality. I think Trey absolutely has star quality. People think I'm a Trey stan. And I'm like, no, what I see is a dude who's going to, in this game, I need a 3-4. Trey has proven he can rebound. He was leading the team essentially in rebounding outside of Jonas down the second half of the season. He can shoot the three. He's an efficient scorer. He can play in transition. He showed you he's willing to defend in the postseason, that he can become a better defender, a shot blocker, and all those things. So, yeah, you have three guys, honestly, on his team, Zion, Herb, Trey. And then the rest of your roster is people that you can have a conversation about if it comes up. Like, there's nobody that anybody should be looking at and saying, these are the untouchables other than those three. And even if the right deal comes along, I'm willing to move, you know, like, unless you're at the top of the league, there's still, you know, a conversation to be had about anybody. But those three guys, outside of those three, like, you can't have a world where Jose is your first guard off the bench next year. No matter how much you like Jose, he's too small and he can't be on ball. He cannot penetrate and create shots for other people. Mm-hmm. He is an undersized two guard because he's not a creator. So he's an off ball player. He's at his best moving the basketball, not creating for others. Mm-hmm. So if he's your first guard off the bench, you've got a problem. If Larry is your first big off the bench next year, you still have a problem. Too many of your guys do the same things. Najee is a combination of all the faults and all the strengths of all your wings. So on some nights, Najee is worth it. And on other nights, he looks like Lance Stephenson struggling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A guy just going at the wrong speed, trying plays he shouldn't try, and doing things he shouldn't do. And this is all impacting Dyson, too, a kid that defensively is light years ahead of where he should be. But on this team now, you have to question his value to this team because defensively he's elite, but can you have two defensively elite players like him and Herb if you're not going to have the complementary players around them? or do you need to move Dyson to get those complementary pieces? So now, yeah, and you have a kid in Jordan Hawkins who looks at it and says, I was on pace to break the rookie record for threes, and you ain't give me no run.
And then getting, and that's one of the players that I'm talking about.
Confidence league. This is a confidence league, is it not?
100%.
And what if you take shots away from a shooter? If you take shots and if you miss shots, as soon as you miss two, I'm sitting you down. What does a shooter stop doing?
Yeah. His confidence all of a sudden starts to drop. He starts to question himself. Because it is mental for those guys who are, for those of us who are scorers, who are shooters. We need, that's why you hear people say he just needs to see one go down. He just needs to see one go in. And it will all of a sudden take from that bottom where you went just that quickly to skyrocket right back up. Because it is more mental than what people can imagine. It's significant. But again, this is what I was alluding to in the beginning. You got guys like Jordan who's like, bro, why am I not getting no run now? Like, I'm providing something for us to get us the buckets that we need. You know, as a young guy, I'm going to stay within the context of what it is that you want me to do. And I can't get no run.
You locked up Matt Ryan and didn't play him. You sign him to a guaranteed deal. You get him off the two-way and all these things. And then you don't play him. You don't play him at all in the playoffs as your offense is struggling. And you end up with averaging 89 points per game in four games in the playoffs. And not once do you get Matt Ryan off the court in real time. These are things that you can go deeper into your – we've always talked about playoffs. You shorten your rotations. But when nothing is working, these are supposed to all be NBA players. They're supposed to come out and be able to find a way to help you, even if it's just for 2 to 5 minutes to just say, hey, make a shot for me.
Mm-hmm.
Make a shot for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what these guys are there to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing is the Pelicans struggle so much with adjustments. That is, again, a maturity and a preparation thing. If you can't adjust to changes on the fly, if the other team is doing things you haven't seen before and you don't know how to play basketball, and that's the thing that we've talked about extensively between you and I, is that you got all the individual skill, your bag can be as deep as the ocean. But the playing of basketball is usually in three dribbles or less, in passes that are made from point A to point B, not no looks, not lobs. It's very simple things. 90% mm-hmm. of the game is extremely simple. 95!
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely simple.
It really is.
But most guys don't know how to play basketball. And that's where you see in the postseason, that's what it comes down to. It's not about talent anymore as much as it's about execution.
Because
everybody in the playoffs is talented.
Execution. That's how you got there. Execution. And it reminds me of something of the great Bernard Griffith told me when I was playing ball at St. Aug. And I made the comment to him as a young buck on varsity. He was like, Dino, we're going to run this play. And I'm like, coach, they know the play. He goes, Dino, it don't matter if they know the play. Can they stop it? We're going to out-execute them. You see, when you set a screen, you're not just going to quickly set it. You're going to set it with an intent. You're going to set it so that way that defensive player can't get over the screen. It doesn't matter if they know the play. Can they stop the play? And I kid you not, that stuck with me forever because it literally got to the point where it was just like, we would run the same play sometimes 10, 12 times in a row. But we had different little variations off of it for the looks. And I say that to say it doesn't change in college. It doesn't change in the NBA. It's the same thing. We are going to out-execute you. It doesn't matter what else goes on. I believe and know that we have the players to do what I need them to do in order for us to be successful. It's really just that simple. Execution, high basketball IQ, and not being afraid in the moment to get caught up in this hopefulness. You got to stop that. Go. Stop hemming. Stop hesitating. And that's what happens. But again, a lot of that comes to the uncertainty and guys not exactly sure of what their role is, which goes back to what? The identity. Who are we? What are we going to be? So the question is, DeGraw, what are the Pels going to do with Trajan? What are the Pels going to do with Griff? What are the Pels going to do on the court? because they are on the clock now. You've had a level and a taste of success. What do you do next? Because guess what? If you win 49 again next season, it's a bust. It's a bust.
You could potentially, and you could win, let's say the numbers change, because it goes from year to year, and it's rare that you get this kind of success at the top. And the teams at the bottom could make the teams at the top a little bit worse record-wise. But it's, are you a better team? You know what I'm saying? Like, the, from year to year, the thing that we notice about the Miami Heat, they've not had a top four record very often under Eric Spoelstra without LeBron James. They don't win 50 games very often without LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
But what we think, the thing that we believe about the Heat every year, unless they're injured, is that they're going to be peaking on the time they reach the playoffs.
At the
whatever
right
basketball
time.
Level of basketball they'll be playing. And the same thing we thought about Doc Rivers with the Bucks. You and I both believe that Doc Rivers is one of the more overrated coaches in the history of the NBA. Has got way more credit for success than he ever deserved. And when Doc took over the Bucks, every player, every coach who ever worked with him said it was going to be a disaster. And that's what it was. Because what does Doc Rivers struggle with? Adjustments. So you have seen the blueprint of failure. You have seen the blueprint of failure, and you can fool yourself into thinking what you have is success, or you can know that what you have is shiny mediocrity. Speaking, like, that's what you got. You have shiny mediocrity. And speaking of Pelicans fans, that's where you'll stay.
That's where you're going to stay. That's where absolutely you'll stay. Speaking of which, and not to get off tangent, but real quickly, have you ever wondered what goes on in Doc's interviews that he always gets a job? I mean, outside of course, him being a great interviewer, apparently. But his level of
he's in the circle. He's in the circle. You know what I mean? When you are a company guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you played the company game.
Mm-hmm.
You never embarrassed the bosses. Whether it's Orlando, whether it was with the Clippers, he never embarrassed anybody. He played the role. When it was time for him to get cut, and he took his check and he walked away.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Doc is a politic. He's a politic man. You know, because clearly, I guarantee you, the next time he and Adrian Griffin in the same room by themselves, it's going to be a lot different conversation than it was the last time they were in a room by themselves.
Yeah,
I think that, you know, you know how guys, quite frankly, how does Monty Williams become the highest paid coach in the NBA?
Yeah. Monty's
when
you, a good
when
guy.
You're talking about guys who had two good seasons in his career, and both of those came because of Chris Paul. They said, like, you was about to be out the door in Phoenix. They were going to get rid of you in Phoenix. Chris Paul saved you.
Yeah.
And you finagled your way from being a good dude who don't cause trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
And you finagled it into being the highest paid coach in the NBA.
And you know, it's funny you
I
mentioned
got everybody
that.
Else in Detroit fired.
It's funny you mentioned that, because that's something that you and I have spoken about in length. That's great that we got guys that play on the Pelicans team who are good guys and don't get into trouble. That's good. That's nice. That's wonderful. You're not supposed to get into trouble. You know, like Chris Rock said, you know, well, I ain't never been to jail. You're not supposed to go to jail. You don't get no credit for that, you know? But I said that to say there's no dog on this team. There's no dog. We got a bunch of nice guys who are good basketball players. But it doesn't elevate you.
I think Herb is a dog. Herb is a dog.
Well, let me rephrase it. Let me rephrase it from the standpoint. But Herb is not somebody that they're going to necessarily listen to in that realm. And Herb is not somebody that
Herb is the
NBA...
ultimate soldier. He's the ultimate soldier.
Correct.
He's not the general.
Correct. Herb is not that guy that the NBA is looking at and banking on to say, oh my gosh, Herb, you know, is that guy. So, yeah, no question. Herb has that dog mentality in him, doesn't back down from anybody, and I love that. But again, he's not one of your top guys, is what I'm referring to, that you have to have that from, you know.
You big three, and I mean, and it's it, every team, you know, we could talk about not being in a big three era, but there we are always in a big three era, because there's three players who are going to dominate on every team, on every roster, there are three players who dominate statistically.
And that's been the case. And that's been the case forever in the game of basketball. It's nothing new.
No, it's. It, I mean, that's. There's three levels to the court. Usually, there's three players who dominate one fashion or another. But yeah, again, if you stack the Pelicans' big three, ultimately, it's a good, nice team.
That's what I'm telling you.
It can beat somebody on one day, and that's fine. But in a series, when you get tested, and that's ultimately what you are building for, is the win seven game series. When you get tested, it's about imposing your will. It's about making subtle adjustments within the game, from game to game. I don't like it when fans do this thing of, well, will this carry over from game one to game two? No, it won't, because they're two separate games. They're completely different games.
They're entities of their own.
Just like the 82 cross season. I do this all season with people. I'm like, you have to look at it as one of 82. You have to look at it as one of 82. Because if you start doing this thing where you say, well, look at the 49. No, look at each one of those. Look at each of the wins and the losses individually, and you will see the tales. The secrets are in those. It's not in the when you stand back from the picture. You got to get in it.
And but you know what that is? One. That's a loser's mentality of trying to make one feel good about some improvements here and there. What's going to carry over? They are individual games of themselves, and they take a life of their own. It's not that black and white and clear cut like people want it to be. Oh, well, it's going to carry over because, no, it's not the case. It doesn't happen. You know what the Pels do a lot of times? And you see it from the fans. They give you that feel good, almost hope. Oh, that's what they do. And that's what I'm talking about. That's why I kept saying they give you the hope because they play with the hope. They don't give you the, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. The oh, yeah is a different feeling and a different movement and a different vibe from the, ooh, I hope, but, man, we look good, though. Man, we look much better. Yeah, but looking much better and feeling good ain't going to get it for you night in and night out. Because the other team could care less about your hope.
Ultimately, I'm going to end it on this, and then I'll let you have the final word. But my thing is this, is in this league, it moves very fast. It moves very fast. And right now it moves faster than ever. And I think to me, this organization has to decide again, what are you playing for? What are you playing for? Are you playing to be competitive? Or are you playing to be champions? Because there's far more risk when you're shooting for championships. There's risk involved. Mm-hmm. You take big swings. The Celtics, like you just talked about, Celtics took a big swing on Porzingis. They took a big swing on Drew. You know what I'm saying? These are big swings to address what they view as the things that they were missing from these runs that they've had over the last several years. That's a big swing. Milwaukee took a big swing with Dame Lillard. And it didn't work this year. Maybe it never works. But
That's how it goes.
A big swing. Minnesota, people said, oh, you gave up too much of a Gobert. For them, they're saying, we took our big swing, and now look at us. Here's where we are. We took our big swing. We might never have gotten here if we don't make this Gobert trade. You're telling us it was wrong and overvalued, but we're the second seed now. So you tell us now where we got to. So ultimately, if the Pelicans are unwilling to take a risk this offseason, a real risk, because that's what it's going to take to get to the next level, at whatever level they're going to take, however they're going to do it, what are you playing for? And if you're going to play for championships, you got to take a swing, man.
Let me add to that before we finish up. The Dallas Mavericks, being that I live here in Dallas and back and forth in L.A., they took a big risk too on the Kyrie with Luka figuring it out and working. But this is the bigger one. When they decided to go and get length in Daniel Gafford, when they decided to get a big, because that's the direction that we're going in. You see, with Derek Lively. That's the second one I was getting ready to get to. Length and bigs with activity on both ends of the court. Being in L.A., Clippers stayed pat. Lakers stayed pat. Where are they? Sitting at home. Take the risks if you are not willing to say, hey, in order for us to go here, maybe it won't work, but let's not go into it with that mindset. This is going to change and impact the direction that we go. If you stay pat, that's exactly where you're going to stay, right there. This, to me, this upcoming offseason is the precipice in the direction of where and who the New Orleans Pelicans will continue to be or become. It's really just that simple. We don't need no big mic drop from either you and I. We're speaking the truth. And, you know, again, I want to reiterate this. We're not beating up on B.I. We're not beating up on the Pels. Because, again, even though I'm not in New Orleans, of course, having worked with the Pels before, I'm still a N.O. for lifer. I'm still fortunate enough to watch every Pelicans game because I have a Fire Stick. Even when, unfortunately, New Orleans people can't watch the Pels, which is crazy to me. When my people from the NO can't watch it, I'm still watching it. And there are many a times that I'm sitting here and I'm observing the game and I'm looking at the intricacies of the game and I'm just like, they just stay right here. You've got to make these next moves. So I most certainly am not beating up on them, but we're just calling it exactly as it is. We got good players, but not next level outside of Zion players. We just don't. We have complementary pieces. Stars in any league. They play a role. They're important, but they're not going to lead you to where you want to go. Are you satisfied with just saying, I have a uniform and I'm on the team? Or do you say, just having a uniform and being on the team ain't enough?
It's going to be a long, interesting offseason, bro.
Griff, so, and then here's the other thing. How many players you think want to come to the Pels? That's another question you got to ask yourself.
If you're a free agent, first of all, if you're a free agent big, why would you want to come to the Pels?
Especially knowing
because you
that
see how bigs have been treated.
There you go. That's why
when
I mentioned
JV.
When you
go back to Derek Favors or Steven Adams or JV, you've seen it. The last three centers who started here got scapegoated. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, Jonas had his limitations, but again, we talked about they didn't put anybody behind him.
Nope.
Jonas ain't supposed to play 36 minutes.
Nope.
He's not supposed to be a defensive stopper. He's your best rebounder, and he's your best interior scorer. He balances you out that way, but you didn't help him by making Larry Nance your only backup big and going out and getting Cody Zeller, who then you refused to even play, so you had no length at all, and Cody wasn't going to give you much anyway, but you didn't even play him.
Another
so what did you bring
is,
him here for?
They didn't even play off of JV. That's another frustrating thing. I'm like, feed the big guy. Why are you not X-cutting? Why are you not setting backdoor screen activity? And I'll be the first to tell you, you know, I've always said this. As a guard, I love my bigs. I love my bigs because I know.
They draw attention.
They
got to deal with the dude who's closest to the bucket.
Bruh.
Defenses have to deal with the dude closest to the bucket. So that's why defenses shift. And we talk about this all the time. If you don't make the defense shift, if nobody ever moves, if the defense is always standing right in front of his man because y'all ain't going nowhere, you've made it very easy to
You
defend.
Have made my job so much easier, and I love playing defense because I know you ain't going to pass and cut. You ain't going to move. You ain't going to dive through the lane. Even if you go from one side of the court to the other side, I know when you do make a pass, you're going to stay in that same spot. You have put me in a position where I don't have to work at all. And that's the frustrating thing. Just because we have this thing in the game now where people are playing five out, it doesn't mean that you can't cut through the lane. It doesn't mean you can't set a backdoor screen. It doesn't mean you pass and just stand. Pass and just stand. Move! Make the defense move. When you make a defense move, you're going to have defensive breakdowns of you being able to get easy buckets and make the game easy. Make the defense move, you get easy scores all night long. They don't do that.
All the teams do it to them. We saw other teams do it.
Oh, they make the Pels work to no end. But again, if somebody was to go back in the vote and look at us having this conversation 7-8 years ago, we are literally saying the exact same things.
Playing without purpose. Playing without purpose. And that's been the Pelicans' problem. Let's end it there, brother. You know, we could keep talking about this, but yeah, I want to see some moves get made. And maybe after we get through the draft and some free agency, we'll do this one more time and see if there's something to be talked about. But I appreciate you. I love you. And thank you for coming back and doing this with me.
My brother, salute always, man. You know you are my brother from another. From day one, man, nothing but love and respect for you, your knowledge, the relationship that we have as brothers and as friends, man, and loving the game the way that we do and being able to talk basketball, not with hopes, okay, but being able to talk the game exactly for what it is. And my brother, yeah, it's definitely been too long and so on and so forth, but, you know, I have so many thankful, knock on wood.
We've been going through some things, dealing with some things, and work, and it's busy.
And life.
We still text, and we still keep
absolutely
in touch. You know,
we're always, so always. That's for
we're
life.
We're still family, bro.
Always, yes, always. 100, my brother. Always.
So for the Dean, Dino Hansen, I am David Grubb, and we just want to thank y'all. Make sure you like, subscribe, rate, review, all those good things. And until the next time, this has been Hard in the Paint.